Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. Choose personalised pricing. It's made for you.
Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Joanna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Who is your first question? Your starter for 10. My four-year-old grandson has a terrible appetite. I don't know how he does it and gets through the day on such little food. We're very worried about him. Any suggestions would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because four-year-olds are so busy, and often they're so busy they can't be bothered to stop for food because they're go, go, go. But if it's at a stage where he's really eating that little that you're also worried, I'd first and foremost say, like, if the loss of appetite is accompanied by a significant loss of weight, then go straight to a doctor and or pediatric dietitian and ensure you're going to a qualified dietitian as opposed to just somebody who's advising in food areas, because that would be quite significant.
Yeah.
I mean, in general, changes in growth around this age can cause appetite slump, as can illness, anxiety, anemia, being run down. All of these can affect their diet. So in general, and it may not apply to this little boy, but if you've a child this age who is refusing food for you, there's a couple of practical things you can do. Make meals interesting, you know, involve them in the food preparation, have them stand up beside you, wash the veggies, help with the cooking. Don't give out at mealtime. You know, if they're not eating, don't make it an emotionally charged time, because you just let them know that this is a battleground they can enter into with you. Change the mealtime to a time of the day when you know he's going to be most hungry. That can help a lot. And allow snacks, but keep them healthy, because if you're a little person and you think, if I refuse my food, there's a sweet treat as an alternative, you're definitely going to refuse food. So if they're having snacks, make sure they're healthy ones. And offer small bites of food until he starts to eat more, because there's some research that would show eating smaller quantities but more often can help increase the metabolism. So that's actually going to be very helpful. And choose calorie-dense foods. And again, like most parents of kids this age, when you can't get them to eat something, you get very creative. So smoothies, soups, pasta sauce loaded with blended hidden vegetables that they think they don't eat can also be a way of getting calorie dense and healthy foods into them. But reading this, I'm sure they've tried a lot of that. So if there's a significant loss of weight, I would be saying to you, get yourself straight to a doctor.
Yeah, if there's a, but oftentimes there isn't.
Yeah.
And they're just motoring along being perfectly normal. And it could be that they're, because their stomach, he's only four, his stomach is tiny. And
absolutely.
He might be just full.
And some children that age, they actually prefer to snack than to sit down and eat a full meal.
Yeah.
And if that was the case, I'd be happy enough to let him snack, just give him little and often. And as I said, make sure they're healthy options. But if he's happy to, you know, eat a carrot stick and some hummus out of his hand while he's still playing with his cars and trains or outside, let him at it.
Yeah.
It's about getting it into him.
Another four-year-old. My four-year-old daughter has been worrying about death. Mm. My wife and I have tried to explain what happens when people die in a simple, honest and age-appropriate way, and that seemed to satisfy her. But recently she started asking, how can I not die? And daddy, will you help me not to die? While becoming extremely upset and saying she doesn't want to die, even when she's old. We're trying to reassure her. We've talked about the things we do to stay fit and healthy. Lots of hugs and love. I'm just wondering if there is any advice you could give me. Any things I definitely shouldn't say or definitely should say. I should add that we are not a religious family, so we don't want to get into any ideas about life after death which might confuse her.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing a lot of the right stuff. First and foremost, I mean, like, yeah, a fear of death or in an, you know, if it's going on for longer than 6 months, we tend to move it into a thanatophobia. You know, it's an actual fear of death. That's actually very common in children age 4 to 8 years old, and it tends to work out at that stage. And it's often like we generally expect small children just to be happy-go-lucky and in good form and happy about life. So this kind of a fear can be very hard to address as parents. But as I said, I think you've done a lot of the right stuff. Children this age, they tend to view death as more of a terrifying state of nothingness. You know, it's very hard to quantify and explain it. And when they think, but that's it, there's nothing, they tend to view and fear themselves, but where will I be? I'll just be nowhere and nothing. And it can become so existential in thought that it's overwhelming for them. So I think that they don't understand what causes it. So you can go through those, yes, we're healthy, yes, we're doing this, but actually it's a fear of nothingness. So I think, you know, she worrying about herself dying and talking about that is also an adjunct to maybe worrying about you dying.
Yeah.
You know, that mum and dad could die and someone else could die. And while it's really tempting to jump in and assure a young child, oh, that's not going to happen, we can't really guarantee this.
Mm.
You know, I remember working with a little girl not much older than this, but her dad had sadly died very unexpectedly. And her whole rationale now was, but nobody can say they won't die because my dad died.
And she's right.
And she was right. So some of it is about sitting down and rather than dismissing or minimizing the fear, meeting her there and acknowledging it, going, that is a scary thought. What do you think happens? Don't get too caught up in what, you know, what belief system or locating someone somewhere. Stay with where she's at. You could also bring in a couple of books. There's a couple of books you could use with this. I mean, I always recommend the Judith Kerr Mog books when we're talking about death, because in the last Mog book, Mog the Cat, Mog dies and
okay.
It's actually dealt
spoiler
with
spoiler alert there.
Sorry there's about 7 books, you know, but the others are lovely as well. But the, you know, it's actually dealt with really well. There's another one, The Invisible String by Patrice Karst. It talks more about how love is limitless through any type of separation, even transient, short, being apart from each other during the day, to death, separation, anger, all of these kinds of things. It talks about the thing that's constant is love. And it's quite nice. And even though it sounds quite abstract, young children respond very well to it. If it's continuing beyond, I would say beyond kind of 6 to 8 weeks, consider referring her to someone like a non-directive play therapist who can just give her a space to process that fear in a non-verbal way and on her terms. That could be helpful. But there are things you can try yourself in the meantime.
Yeah, it's you can see how it's hard because
it's very hard.
As a concept, it's hard to process because she's
for adults
non-existing
to get their heads around.
Is you know, if that's what you believe, is oh god, this difficult one.
I know,
to get your
I mean,
head
it
around.
Can be handy if you do believe in something because you have this language to locate a person somewhere. Yeah.
Our 8-year-old daughter is showing OCD tendencies. She's developed funny tics, and once she gets into the wrong mood, she has all out tantrums. We think we should bring her to see someone. Would this be the best course of action?
Yeah, I mean, look, straight off, if you think you should bring her to see someone, then the answer is yes. You're the expert on your child. If you're concerned about something like, I don't know quite what you mean by OCD tendencies, but when you mention things like tics and when then you describe if she's in the wrong mood, I'm not sure is that attributable to, is she sensory overstimulated, what else might be going on? So based on what you're saying here, you've given me enough to say, yeah, I probably would take her to see somebody. And how you do that is go to your GP and ask them to refer you to Lucina or CAMS, whatever is in your locality. If you think, though, that these symptoms could be transient and linked or triggered by anxiety, if there is a life event going on in the family, and bear in mind, what is a significant life event to a young child is entirely different to what is a significant life event to us adults. So if it's something like a new teacher, a friend who's moved away, it could be something that on the surface to us seems small, but to her could be huge. So if you think there is a trigger like that, respond to that and address that underlying anxiety. But while you're doing it, get yourself a referral, if only to rule something out.
Yeah. Just going back to the little fella who isn't eating. My 5-year-old son got fussy, stopped eating, was just pig ignorant about it. I turned dinner into a game, finding the different colours, singing songs about the food. At the minute at work, it's working anyway. Someone else says, my son was hiding food down the couch that he wasn't eating. I never knew mouldy cheese and crackers could smell so rancid. Turns out he was trying to skip the cheese part to get to the sweet treat part.
Yeah.
We keep an eye on him now to make sure everything is eaten before the treats are handed out. Dan says my 3-year-old girl gets very little time on the family iPad, but when she does, she will do anything to stay on it, even eat all of her dinner or anything on the iPad. That may help the kid that's not eating. And Patricia says there's a book, this is on the subject of kids that are puzzled by death. There's a book called Badger's Parting Gift. Ideal for young children who need to discuss death and the values of life.
It's a lovely book. Yeah, I know it. Yeah, it's a lovely, lovely book. Just on the iPad one, you might be solving one problem to
and
create
another one.
So try not to let that be your solution. Yeah.
Yeah. Right, we do have to take a break after that. Is there any support for step-parents? 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Next question for Joanna is this. As a custodial stepmother to two teenagers, both of whom have been living with me since they were very young, and our own seven-year-old child, parenting is a huge issue and is becoming more and more challenging as they go further into the teenage years. Most of the parenting problems are connected with the involvement of extended family members and not the birth mother, as she has little interest. And as a result, I don't seem to have a role. I'm expected to financially and emotionally provide for them, and when they need something, it's me that is asked to get it, which I don't have a problem with at all. But when it comes to actual parenting, such as correcting their behaviour, disciplining, or even being consulted on their time spent with extended family members, I have been told it's not my place. There are also additional issues with any time spent away with my own biological child, as I try to give as much dedicated time as I can, as I work very long hours, partly to support my husband in ensuring everyone is provided for. There's very little support for step-parents in Ireland, and I often feel very alone. My husband's family just don't seem to get it, and I'm constantly feeling judged by them. I would like to know if there are other step-parents, particularly step-mums, out there who feel the same isolated frustrations.
God, I mean, it's kind of frustrating even just reading through that. Because I think part of the dilemma here is that there's two aspects to parenting any child. And one is functional care, you know, that they have to be fed and dressed and you financed and the functional day-to-day stuff just to keep them alive. And then there's the over and above stuff when, you know, the kisses, the hugs, tell me where you are, what are you doing, allowing me to be involved in the other stuff. And I think it's just torturous to be expected to do the functional stuff and then shut out of the over and above stuff, which makes parenting tolerable.
Yes. You know,
so I think this is really difficult and complex, actually. The extended family that's mentioned here, I'm assuming that's of the birth mother's family. So there may be a high emotional charge around that and who's involved and who's not. So, you know, I mean, look, you've been raising them since they were very young, which actually further complicates it because you have a dominant parenting role, but they can equally, as teenagers really will, throw at you, but you're not actually my parent.
Yeah.
So parenting teenagers is hard enough, but adding the politics of a blended family in, I think, is really difficult. I totally get that spending time with your biological child is really, really important. And I'm just wondering, do you get the opportunity to spend one-to-one time with these teenage girls as well? Because that might help. And, you know, something that isn't in the functional sphere, but is a nice thing to do, going out for a coffee, a hobby that you both enjoy, going for a run or a walk together, something like that, getting nails done, something that teenage girls would really enjoy and see as a real treat. That could be an in. In general, I find, you know, dealing with blended families or separated families, that there tends to be this legacy of guilt, anger, mistrust that is hanging over from the separation that can result in boundaries and rules not really being held because you're trying to overcompensate. Oh, but because of, and sure, God love them this and maybe. And that's actually in teenage years really not helpful.
Because it's bad enough as teenagers.
So I'm going to suggest that a family therapist actually may be able to provide a space for all of these issues to be aired by everyone involved, because I don't know that it would be effective to have a couple's session without the girls there because they're old enough to participate. And it may be...
No, it's probably worth asking the dad as well.
Oh, like, yeah,
what's
definitely
he saying? And now he probably does feel, you know, that guilt you referred to. He's torn that way. But at the same time, if they've been living with this, you know, father and stepmother for a long time.
Who's been doing the mothering.
Yeah, and she's like looking after someone else's kids, but getting all the blame for it, if you like.
Completely. And I think that's really, really important, that there has to be ground rules of respect at home. And dad has a really important role in upholding this because he is the biological parent who can say, my rules, this is what you must do. But I think there might be other stuff simmering under the surface here. The fundamental question is there support for step-parents? So, I mean, I looked some of this up because it's actually quite difficult to find a dedicated group, you know, a website. That what I would suggest is onefamily.ie. Do give advice to parents in all kinds of family structures. And if they're not placed to offer step-parent support, they may well know of a support group or informal support group who could. Equally, you know, when I did look some up for step-parent support, a lot of kind of references to close closed Facebook groups came up. So I couldn't really find out much about those, but that might be worth exploring as well. But I would start with onefamily.ie. I really commend you, though, reaching out and saying, look, I do need support and I'd like to talk to people in this situation, because at least you won't feel so alone with it. And it would be worth doing that. But I think do come back to talking to your husband, laying some ground rules, and consider a family therapy session.
Because there, I suppose there is a, there is that lazy cliche about the evil stepmother.
Utterly unhelpful. And any kind of splitting and dividing that can exist in blended families, not all, but can exist, you know, is going to be exacerbated in teenage years, when teenagers, by their developmental nature, tend to set themselves in opposition to their parents and caregivers anyway.
So if anyone listening actually would know of any of any groups, that would be very helpful. Just a little bit of breaking news, it's more than a little bit. The former boss of Anglo-Irish Bank, David Drum, has been found guilty of partaking in a 7.2 billion euro conspiracy to defraud in 2008. Obviously, sentencing and all those kind of things will come later, but they have come to a judgment and he has been found guilty. Next question is, I have a four-year-old daughter who shared a bath this week with her three-year-old male cousin. My daughter could not get over her cousin's penis and the fact that she didn't have one. I explained that only boys have penises. She was so amazed at this news, she's now asking all the men she meets about their penises. Do they have one? Do they know women don't have them? Unfortunately, when he tried, when he talked to my husband and father about this, they both collapsed in giggles and now thinks it's funny. So she does it all the time. It's been going on a week. I'm not finding it funny anymore.
Rather unhelpfully laughing at you there.
Sorry.
But yeah, it's only been a week. That's going to be my first thing. So this is new radical information. Her little mind has been blown. People's reactions to it this week have been a novelty for her. She's experiencing herself as amusing. So I'm going to say stick with it. It will be about something else next week or the week after. This will be old news. I also, just to say, it is so utterly normal at this age for children to differentiate and go, oh, you're different to me. And what, is that what you've got? And look what I've got. And to be curious about each other in this way. So don't shame her. I don't think you have, but don't shame her. Don't show too big a reaction to it. And that's, you know, really to dad and granddad, maybe tone down the giggles and just answer her very seriously.
It's hard to do, though.
But just to say, yes, you're right. That's how it is. Casualize it, you know, boys have a penis, girls have a vagina, that's how it is. And emphasize when you're talking about it with her that, you know, a penis is a boy's private part, in the same way you would have even so far been talking to her that her vagina is private, so that she understands this isn't something you go around in the street or supermarket asking random people. So just really get back to basics on the private part language. Casualize it, be very much, yes, you're absolutely right, that's exactly how it is, now let's move on and talk about something else. But try not to overreact to it, as in don't even think that it's been huge news in your house for 1 week. I'd say give that another week and she'd over it.
You will have to listen to it for a while even longer then. My son is almost 16. He's fairly outgoing, has a good group of friends. The problem is he speaks very low. And a number of people have commented on how difficult it is to understand what he is saying, like his teachers, his aunts, uncles, and now his dad is picking on him about it. I've spoken to him about this and I don't know what can be done. Should I bring him to a speech therapist or someone who will be able to help him project his voice and speak more clearly? That's an interesting one.
Really interesting one, because my first question is this recent, you know, since he hit adolescence, or has he always spoken in a very quiet voice? Because thus far he's managed to get to 16. So maybe it wasn't such a big issue. But of course, at this age, we are expecting adolescents to, you know, really assert themselves and be more independent and do things. So maybe it's becoming more of an issue. I'm going to ask straight away that dad stop picking on him about it, because that's just not going to help. So yeah, has it always been a feature of him? Does he himself feel he needs help? Like, is he saying, this is a worry, or is it part of a self-esteem, self-confidence thing? That's what I'm wondering. Is it part of something bigger, or is it something that is speech? If it's always been a feature of him, then yes, absolutely, consult with a speech therapist either way. That could certainly help. There's another thing, if he's really eager to change it himself and self-conscious about it, you could practice at home saying to him, okay, stand at this side of the room. I want you to picture a deaf granny at this end of the room, and granny has to be able to hear everything you say. Even if you get him to close his eyes, take a deep breath, and then do it and just say a little louder, a little louder, and role play it out pretty much in a visualization way. That could help. I would be more interested as well, though, in it, when you go to a speech therapist, maybe consider having his hearing checked as well, just in case there is a correlation there that maybe he thinks he's speaking loud enough, but it might be a hearing issue. So rule out the physical stuff, go to a speech therapist, get his hearing checked, and then look at what else might need to be addressed. Ask Dad to stop picking on him, because if he's otherwise shy and anxious, it's only going to make it worse.
Yeah. I wonder, is there something he's, by speaking, he doesn't like his voice? It could be
anything. And sometimes it can kick in with, especially young teen boys, when their voice breaks and their voice changes, they become very self-conscious.
Yeah.
And they just become quiet. That's why I'm interested, when did this start? Has it always been there? Or is it something that has just started recently? But I would talk to your son about it. Never mind aunts, uncles and teachers. Talk to him about it and see how he feels about it.
Joanna, thanks a million for coming in to us.
Thank you.
Joanna Fortune there. We're going to take a break after that. Obsessive.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avantcard. Choose personalised pricing. It's made for you.
Love.